You are listening to the Fit Mom Podcast, hosted by myself, Ash Iovino, and my co-host, Marie Zatelli.
Here we celebrate the unfiltered phases of motherhood.
On this podcast, no topics are too taboo, from menstrual cycle to menopause, weight loss, hormones, you name it.
We are here to share real stories, dumb down the science, and motivate you. So if you're ready to embrace a sustainable, healthier, and more balanced life, then welcome to your new community.
There you are, Dana. There you are.
You are in a different space or a different angle?
I think a different angle. I moved the chair.
Okay, I see what could be a cot, maybe.
Very well spotted. I'm still in the baby room. I've just angled it that the rocker is against the cot so that I don't sway the whole time.
Literally. So is your nursery all ready?
Perks of living up north and not having and having like extra spare time, especially on weekends.
Amazing. And have you gone like very gender neutral?
Yeah, I've gone very gender neutral. I'll send you photos though after this chat, because at the beginning I was thinking for this room, let's do like one of the walls. What do you call it? I wanted to say wall paint. Wall art? Yeah.
Okay.
Wallpaper, wall art. And so then I was like, no, I actually really enjoy the slick, clean look. And the bed's got some stuffed animals that we've already, like toys that we've already gotten for as gifts and some nice cushions and stuff. And then Rocco surprised me and said he ordered something for the baby room. I was secretly hoping it was T-shirt co bedding because I'm going to be spending so much time in here and on the double bed. But then it was decals. And now I'm like, it's very sweet, but I don't know how, not the best interior decorator. How do I put these decals on these tropical like palms, monkeys, tigers without it looking super kitsch?
Yeah, that's hard. A tough one.
Yeah, it's not like a wall art that's already put together. You now have to place them together. So anyways, I shall figure that one out.
Oh, have you enjoyed the putting it together process?
Yeah, it's my little zen room now. I think on the last podcast I mentioned, I've got my mom will journal in here. And so many times when I was going through like sort of lows, or just needing to journal, I was prolonging it. And then I eventually thought, you know what? We've got a special candle that we bought for this room that we've started like lighting it whenever we come in here. So it smells really nice. But the journal here, I come into this space, even if I have to write a paragraph, always makes me feel better. So it's becoming, I'm spending like bits of time in here because it's like a little sacred. No screaming yet. No colic babies in here yet. I shouldn't put that out there.
Don't take back those words.
I just don't want to be so naive, I suppose. Because I think at times I'm so optimistic and in a good space. And then I'm like, wait a minute. Shit's going to get real and just expect. And I think that's why today's topic is going to be very, very helpful even for myself, is like, don't expect things to go according to plan. Be informed with what can go wrong, I suppose.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that we are more resilient and stronger than we give ourselves credit for. I remember my mom saying how horrible I was as an infant and just did not stop screaming, just this nightmare child. And my mom was very young when she had me, 19. So she was a baby herself. And I, after Ophelia was born, she was a very easy baby. I don't like that term, easy and hard. She was a stereotypical baby, you know, just a pleasant all the time. And then I said to my mom, if I have an infant, like you described I was, I'm not going to cope. And then came Arlo, which was like, it felt like a year of colic. And there were many a days, if not every day, that I was, I can't do this. Like, this is too much. And then sort of 4 years down the line, it's like, wow, we got through that. But when you're in the trenches, it does feel unbelievable. But yeah, you surprise yourself how strong and resilient you are.
So true. And also that it's just temporary. Even with this pregnancy journey, just the reminder of someone saying, you hear often, enjoy it, it goes by fast. That doesn't almost like sink in, but it's when someone just calmly tells you, you know, how quickly it is going to go, you start to realize. And my very good friends and I are all pregnant at the same time, been talking about how it's the strange time is the strangest concept in pregnancy because it's going by so slowly that you're almost wishing for the next, you know, trimester or next stage or to get through something. And then suddenly you also realize time goes by so quickly. It's like this, yeah, strange.
And I think it's from pregnancy till the end as moms, like there's the grappling between wanting to see the next stage and a difficult stage to be over to not wanting time to move at the same time.
Yeah, it's so true. And also it's funny how the different phases come, and we'll start talking now about prepping emotionally for birth. But just after we had our last podcast episode specifically around prenatal mental health, I was talking about I was in a good phase, and literally a day later I hit such a low, and it's been like a week of I was crying. I had my first tantrum cry in the parking lot of Moerevier shopping mall in Potchefstroom when Rocco, shame bless, he really doesn't say, he's really a gentle soul and quite sensitive, but he didn't realize what he was saying it when he was saying it, thought I was going to find it funny because usually, you know, I'm not too sort of reactive or sensitive about my body, but obviously things are different and hormones are at a high. And he commented because I was wearing this t-shirt, which was not a crop top.
I'm nervous already.
I know. It was a t-shirt, not cropped up, shorts and a fanny pack. And as I climbed out of the car, he had a giggle. And me being sensitive, I looked at him and I was like, what are you giggling at? And he just said, no, you know, you just look like a Buddha Maniki with a book. Oh my gosh. Initially, I had a giggle. I was like, and I was like, wait a minute. That is the most. How could you say that? And then I was like, I told you to be sensitive with me. I told you don't ever call it a book. Don't call it a pants. Like, use your words. And he felt horrendous the entire day because things like that, he won't sort of defend what he was saying. He'll immediately feel bad. And then I felt bad. And then I was just realizing, oh my gosh, my hormones are at an all-time high.
Oh, man. Shame. I feel, yeah. Such unknown a couple to navigate.
Totally. And also the worst is he's training for a full Ironman, and training endurance is my, like, it's my one of my biggest passions. And so when he goes out in the morning for 3-4 hours, comes back with a high, I miss that obviously. And I'm like, oh, just, you know, my time will come. I'll get there one day when I can also do these things again. And so because he's on such a high, he's feeling so good. He's obviously looking ripped. And yeah, I am body every single day, especially this period, stretching, changing, in pain, no endorphins. And so to have a conversation like that, you can, yeah, you can imagine it just did not go down well.
Yeah, and it just highlights the sort of transition for a mom into motherhood is so physical, whereas a transition from dad into sort of fatherhood or man into dad, you know, it isn't a physical transformation. I'm not undermining their process, but it is very different.
So true. Yeah, I've never actually like sort of highlighted that or thought about that specifically, is the physical Because it's, like you say, it's not just now, it's also the birthing experience, postpartum, and going forward. But I think with today's conversation about prepping emotionally for birth, I suddenly felt quite overwhelmed with this topic. I didn't up until I was very excited to talk about it, still am, but realized when I listened to a podcast episode how many things, of course, there that like advice that's been given, but how things have changed from my first set of friends who fell pregnant about 2016. Conversations were always like, are you going to try for natural C-section? Kind of spoke about epidural, spoke about a couple of things. To be honest, I don't even, we spoke about things about a traumatic birth. Don't think I understood it, obviously, to the extent that I do now, but never. Now that I've been listening to these podcasts and educating myself, like, oh my gosh, it's actually so overwhelming, because now what about delayed cord clamping and the time of skin to skin? And are you even going to have skin to skin if something's wrong with the baby and that's the rush of the baby? Like, there's all these things to consider the closer you get to your birth experience that I actually felt, I don't know if it's better sometimes. I suppose it depends on the type of person you are. Is it better to have the information and to just know how things can go either way, and also to be educated so you can make certain decisions when you're in that situation? Or are you one of those people that maybe it's just sometimes being a little bit naive, not knowing exactly what all these things are and things are that can go wrong, so that you almost don't have that preconceived idea of, you know, shit hitting the fan? And if I look back at a lot of my friends 8 years ago, they didn't know this stuff and they still had beautiful births, or, you know, it went the way it was meant to go at the end of the day. I don't know what the answer is to that.
I don't think there is one. Sorry. I think it's sort of a knowledge is power, or is ignorance bliss? But I think, you know, you're saying there's this sort of, well, it isn't just natural or C-section or vaginal, C-section. It's now delayed cord clamping and skin to skin and dad skin to skin. And, you know, do I want ambient music and dim lighting? You know, there's all of these bits. And I think maybe if we categorize, some of those are sort of personal preference and others are more medical guidelines. You know, whether or not you have music or candles, or, you know, that's very personal. That's a personal preference. Whereas things like delayed cord clamping or not bathing the newborn or skin to skin, there's more medical research behind that. And I think that's also why it's so important to have the medical team that is aligned to your goals. Mm-hmm. Because I think they're the professionals that will guide you, whether it's a doula, a midwife, a OBGYN, a GP, a nurse, whoever's part of your birthing team. You know, they have so much insight into that. And I think we can get lost in the land of research, podcasts, Google, YouTube videos. And I think if you feel supported, heard, and safe with your birthing team, to have that really honest conversation that actually all of these things are so overwhelming. What is important? What's not important? Could you give me sort of the facts and the meat behind where this research is?
The best is actually to just go, like, early on, I suppose, even when you start getting all these bits of information, is taking it with the time that you have for the questions for your gynae or for your medical team to ask them then and there. And I've quickly realized my scenario is very different to how it would have been if I had gone through pregnancy last year when I was still based in Cape Town. There was almost like an overwhelm of options, different gynaes, you know, doulas, you name it. Whereas now, sitting in the small town, me asking my doctor what his opinion is about a doula and him, you know, having the response he has, it's interesting to, yeah. So I take my questions with, but I quickly also realized that some things are just out of my control and what my options are, yeah, which I kind of find refreshing. But I do like what you say is almost distinguishing what is, you know, a trend and people are sort of advocating on social media quite loosely, which influences you, and what is actually up to trusting your medical team and what's medical. There's a fine line of knowing that, being someone going through this for the first time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think sort of, you know, with all of the options, that can feel empowering. And I think as women, as maternal beings, we have far bigger say nowadays in birth. I mean, if we speak to moms and grannies, they just kind of went with it. There was no birth plans or, you know, doulas sort of supporting. It was a very different birthing space. And I think sort of the stand that we have now is incredible and empowering and liberating, but it can also be overwhelming. And, you know, it's not just A or B, it's now A to Z. And that can feel like a lot.
Yeah, 100%. Why is it so important to also have that understanding that, you know, you have your birth plan, but things can very likely, a lot of the times, not sort of work out the way you are hoping it to?
I think my, I don't know if favorite's the right word, but let's go with favorite. My favorite thing about a birth plan is actually the writing of the birth plan. And I think it gives us an incredible opportunity of self-reflection and a real good dig at actually what would I like this to look like. And I think it can be a really great therapeutic process in putting pen to paper and thinking, if I close my eyes and envisage this experience, what does it look like? And that in itself can be, you know, a really valuable conversation and a sort of mental preparation of what could this look like? And maybe you do your first sort of word vomit on paper that's just getting the picture that I have in my head on paper, and then going through it and picking out the pieces that you'd really like in the plan. But I think another thing we can look at is plan and intention. So we can have a plan, but like you say, it doesn't always go to plan. And sort of also looking at the intention. So if I created my ideal birth, how would I feel? You know, what kind of emotions do I want to take into that room? You know, what sort of thoughts can I combat if negative thoughts come in? Sort of what are some of my positive thoughts I can try and counteract with? Do I have maybe some affirmations that I'd like to bring into the birthing place? So have your plan, but I think another very important component is sort of more intention-based. How do I want this experience to feel?
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of putting it. And can you explain, because I know you've written a really nice article in the past, specifically on traumatic birth. Again, something I didn't realize was as common. Of course, I was naive to it, but also when we chatted in the past and having worked together, my understanding of traumatic birth quickly changed to realizing that something, I think you were mentioning it before, that might be, you know, triggering to me, someone can go through the exact same birth and sort of not have seen that as something traumatic, which I found very fascinating. And that's, I suppose, why traumatic birth is so common, because it comes in all different sort of experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think trauma for many of us sounds like a very intense word. I don't think we use it lightly. Trauma holds a lot of power, and it's got a very strong negative association, and feels like a very intense word. And when we think of birth, You know, it's beautiful, it's connection, it's meeting this being that you've grown and made out of love. And there's so much sort of beauty and bliss around birth that we almost feel we're not allowed to include trauma. You know, these two words, birth and trauma, don't go together. And I think many women have experienced traumatic births, but the word traumatic doesn't sort of align with sort of what they thought birth would be. So I think we probably find more women experience traumatic births than maybe they share or feel comfortable acknowledging. But to go back to your question, you know, birth trauma, many of us think of as physical, sort of a tear, you know, a physical trauma. Obviously, a birth trauma we know can be emotional and physical as well. So an undesirable, unexpected, difficult to manage, accept event happening physically, emotionally. And I think another part that is important is perceived or not. So if a birth felt maybe that something terrible was going to happen and there was a perceived threat, that can be traumatic. The threat doesn't actually have had to happen. We can maybe compare it to something like a break-in, a house break-in. Let's use that as an example. If someone is rattling at your door trying to get in, that's traumatic. You know, that can be absolutely terrifying. Whether or not they came in and stole something, the experience was still traumatic. And I think, you know, just using that as a maybe a strange analogy, but birth can very much be the same. If there's a fear of something happening, there's a threat of something bad happening, maybe, or we can't find baby's heart rate or baby's in distress, we've got to do something quickly. Maybe baby's delivered perfectly healthy and you're both fine. There was still that perceived threat of, oh my goodness, something is going wrong. And that is traumatic. And I think one of the things we need to look at with birth trauma, if mom felt it was traumatic, it was traumatic. It's not a negotiation. You know, if mom felt my birth was traumatic, regardless of what happened, or if other moms agree, her experience is what is important.
As you're speaking, I realize I'll also share it. And I suppose for anyone listening, mumble.com, is that your URL, mm-hmm. right? You've got the amazing resources on there, one of them being the checklist of that postpartum checking your mental health. I actually printed that as well for my, I'm very organized for someone who's 23 weeks, organized with some things. Don't think I've written a birth plan or thought that far, but anyways. And then for those who are in the WTAF Fit Mom Facebook group, I'll also share that guide there, because I think it's also, like you say, it's the small things that you might not identify as traumatic. I listened to another podcast of a mom that didn't actually realize she had prenatal depression because of various reasons, and not being so aware of it, just being aware, like we spoke about in the previous episode, about postnatal depression. So I think that a guide like that is super helpful. And if you are sort of ticking a couple of those things that you've listed, what are the next steps in, do you always, you know, necessarily have to seek counseling or chatting to someone? Or are there processes that, if it's sort of, I don't know if you can cook it, what do you call it, distinguish trauma as being mild or not so mild, but are there ways of coping pre-seeing someone just after it sort of happened?
I think that's a great question. And I don't think it's as clear cut and prescribed. You know, every situation is different. And it is obviously so important to reach out for help if you are struggling. So I don't think there's a clear cut way of, you know, steps to take. But one of the things that I think is fabulous for any mom, is to, I mean, I'm a pen and paper gal, I like to write. But if you're not and you want to do it verbally with someone you trust, that's incredible too. But sharing your birth story. And in the moment, there's so much going on that many women find they're in it. You know, they're in this tunnel vision of I'm getting through the birth. And it's quite interesting. I use tunnel vision. Now I just think of a vagina. So the birth can be quite, mostly consuming. So one of the really great things we can do is reflect on what happened. And I love this exercise and doing it with moms and love doing it myself is, well, what happened? What happened during your birth? And that process is so helpful for you to sort of actually let's have a look. What was I thinking, feeling? You know, what was I smelling, tasting, looking at, step by step, what happened on this journey? And it's amazing how much you recall when you go through that process. And one, it's just a great opportunity to cherish and relook at a really special time. Another part is we can put pieces together for ourselves of, oh yeah, I hadn't quite thought about that. And if we did experience our birth as traumatic, it's a great opportunity to highlight what parts of the birth experience were really challenging, whether that's emotional or physical, a perceived threat, what happened during my birth that perhaps was really challenging or difficult. So I think that can be one of the first steps, is just recalling your birth story. And then speaking through it, if you have a safe space, partner, friend, support group, therapist, and working through what you found traumatic. And then I think sort of if your symptoms are pervasive, if, you know, you're experiencing more PTSD symptoms, then to reach out to a mental health professional. But I think a birth story is a fab place for any mom to go.
What were your both of your pregnancies like? Were they very different? Not pregnancy, sorry, birth.
All pregnancy. Birth. I think it's quite a useful one maybe to talk through, because my two births physically were almost identical. I had almost the exact same experience, but that were felt in two very different ways. So my first was a planned C-section. She was delivered premature. There were complications, so she was delivered prematurely. And her sort of diagnosis was unknown. So that ambivalence is where the trauma and the anxiety sat. So she had stopped growing at 24 weeks and her growth was really slow. And they believed it was a chromosomal abnormality that was causing this growth restriction. But obviously it was picked up late in pregnancy, already in the third trimester. So we just had to check in every week. And once the growth had stopped, they would deliver her. So I had 3 days of steroids for her lungs. And then at 35 weeks and 6 days, she was delivered. Planned C-section, and the fear and anxiety of not knowing what her health would be like really tainted the whole birth experience. I very much dissociated from the enjoyment and the excitement of birth and was in a place of something's going to be wrong. I don't know what's going to be wrong. How are we going to manage this diagnosis? then when she was born, she was in the NICU for 24 hours. And then she came to me, and there was no diagnosis. She was 100% healthy. There was no chromosomal abnormalities. She was a perfectly healthy little being.
But you only knew that after 24 hours.
So I was able to see her for a short period of time. She needed oxygen. And I mean, what does one know as a brand new mother? I couldn't tell you if there was something wrong. So during that time, it was, very unknown, what was going on. So that ambivalence is perhaps the part that was traumatic, the not knowing. So the actual, I also had to go through my own process of working through birth trauma, because the actual birth, well, physically, mentally, emotionally, like we were both healthy and they did what they had to do. So I told myself it can't be traumatic. We're fine. But the emotional process of not knowing was incredibly traumatic and needed a lot of work to go through.
Mm.
And I think the part then that was almost hardest was the people around me's reaction of, you must be so relieved she's fine. Well, yes, of course I am, but that doesn't take away the last 11 weeks of my pregnancy living in fear and my birth being, 7 minutes of agonizing anxiety. And then sort of working through all the emotions that come with that, and sort of gratitude, but also anger and grieving almost what I thought it would have been. And I think that's an important one, is allowing ourselves to grieve that we didn't have the pregnancy or the birth that we envisaged.
Yo, that is, I haven't heard a story like that. It makes so much sense in how you describing it as being traumatic, and I think that would also trigger me, people's responses about going, but it's okay, she's perfectly healthy. Like you say, 11 weeks, that's a long period as a first-time mom. Like, if I just think about the fear I've had around first trimester, second trimester, small things, that is, that's a lot. And then with Arlo, how do you say it was the same, but was it similar in terms of him being prim?
No, so he was born at 38 weeks. I mean, that can maybe be a conversation for a different day, sort of the emotional decisions of VBACs and all of that kind of thing. But we made the decision to not go for a VBAC and had another planned C-section. And that was at 38 weeks. But because there wasn't the same anxiety buildup of there's something wrong, we're only going to know at birth what this wrong is, I went into that birth a very different mom. I went in sort of with the excitement and the bliss and the euphoria that I thought I would have had the first time. So in that way, it was actually quite healing to experience that. And then sort of the C-section process was very much the same. If I compare, the two procedures, which is such a strange word when you refer to your birth, but the two births were very much the same, other than the fear of something being wrong. And I think another part that was different was obviously Arlo was born without needing any medical intervention. So he sort of stayed with me from the minute he came out, whereas with Ophelia, they had to take her away. So obviously there's trauma in that as well. So his birth was a far more pleasant experience, and one that I look back purely fondly rather than looking back with anxiety.
I feel more don't know how to describe it, but when I'm getting all of this information from podcasts or online, and especially because the algorithm's now feeding me a lot of things that we'll touch on as well, but like hypnobirthing and the position that you can be in and all this stuff that I didn't know a couple of years back, I feel that it's what puts me more at ease in knowing the things that can go wrong and can go right is when people tell their stories, almost like stories of getting through it. Because, yeah, then you're hearing it firsthand from someone who's not necessarily, you know, a medical practitioner who doesn't see it as necessarily sometimes black and white. And that just gives me, yeah, whenever I've heard my friends' birth stories, it's just so comforting to know that there's so many different stories and how it worked out, and that it worked out in the end. And if it didn't or didn't go according to plan, it still worked out how it should have been. But there's obviously a lot that's out of your control. Especially I met a girl the other day and she was really, really hoping for natural, but then got told quite, I think at like 35 or 36 weeks that she's going to have to go for planned C-section. And we were just saying that even with a planned C-section, there's a lot of emotion around it, especially if that was not your plan, but just knowing in advance at least, and then being able to process it and prep and then go to the hospital with a bit more, I don't know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, a bit more in your control. Whereas when you go planning for natural, or, you know, you go into labor and then suddenly something happens, you get an emergency C-section. But yeah, what is actually in our control? Candles, telling our husband what to do, or partners.
Maybe not even candles. Maybe there's a restriction against candles. I mean, you don't know.
If you can find out before, you can go ask. battery candles, backup.
There we go. No, I think with sort of what one can control and what one cannot control, I think what's useful to remind ourselves of is, in an emergency situation, which, you know, there are those cases, the goal of all professionals involved is safety. So their goal is, I need to be safe physically. And I think the danger in that is there's not always emotional comfort. And I think sort of understanding from both perspectives that the goal is survival. And if there is an emergency, that is their role, that's what they have to do. And unfortunately, sometimes that comes with maybe not enough preparation to explain emotionally and mentally what's about to happen. And I think there's a lot going on that we don't understand or see as moms, unless maybe we are doctors ourselves. But for the most part, we don't really understand what is happening. And I think that can feel very out of our control and create anxiety. So one of the things that I think we can do is sort of empower ourselves on what the process could look like. So sort of regardless of which birth we're intending on, what do both births look like? And I mean, I love, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I love a birth vlog. I could watch births all day. I absolutely love just the whole process of watching the mom become a mom. I mean, but from little, I remember there was a program when I was a child called One Born a Minute, One Born Every Minute. It was a BBC. I mean, maybe it's still on, I don't know. But I've always found that process really fascinating. But I think as a pregnant mom, having a look at what these births could look like, you know, asking your healthcare providers what happens you know, what does this process look like in a C-section or a vaginal birth? How do things anatomically occur? And I think there's an importance there on looking at not what ifs. And I think that's something that we can creep down the wrong rabbit hole. And what if anything could go wrong? What are all the things that could go wrong? And I don't think that is always knowledge is power. I think that can be quite a dangerous thing for us to do. And remember, our brain can't distinguish between reality and imagination. So if we're feeding our brain, these are all the things that could go wrong in birth, we're receiving that as an anxiety-provoking situation. You know, our brain doesn't know that this isn't real. Our brain will receive this as, oh my gosh, this is horrible, this is terrifying. And I think one of the things that we could do is looking at positive birth stories. That is not ignoring that things can happen, but we don't have to fixate on all of the negative things that could happen at birth. So we're aware that, yes, challenging, unforeseen things can come up, but this is a positive example of what birth could look like. And sort of not fixating on all the what ifs.
Yeah, that's good advice, especially if you know the type of person that you are. I had this conversation with friends as well, just talking about baby monitors and actually with most of the things on the baby list. And their opinions are so vast as to what helped certain moms and what didn't, even starting from pregnancy. I've got a pregnancy or maternity pillow, which has saved me, one of those really lengthy ones, which I absolutely love. My sister and a lot of friends and someone who I got it from absolutely didn't find it useful at all. Mm-hmm. It's like starts from there to the baby monitor discussion was, how much do you actually want to know? Do you want the owlet advanced technology mm-hmm. where the sensor wraps around the baby's foot and you know exactly when they're breathing, when, you know, what's happening? Some moms were like, I don't want that. I'll overfixate. I'll just look at the monitor. Yeah. I'll panic when it goes off. Other moms were like, well, I know someone's baby was saved because of it. And so it's so overwhelming. But I like what you say. And it is, for me, my personality, what has helped is getting the knowledge of what is kind of in your kind of an option for you to put in your birth plan. What is of things that I'm going to have to just, you know, surrender to, and it's medical and we have to see how things go for the next couple of weeks. And then also with that knowledge and with what you said early on and having this medical team that you trust, things like, I know a lot of my friends said breastfeeding experience was also a quite traumatic or very emotional, not being able to get baby to latch, all these sorts of things that I've heard. So I just know I've got no idea even if I'm going to be able to produce milk. But what is in my control is getting a lactate specialist. And one of the girls here actually recommended a friend, messaged her. She said, I can see you at 35 weeks. Not necessarily, you don't have to do it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so mom. Like, even at the end of the day, if I don't produce milk, I want the knowledge. So I've booked her for 35 weeks and then she comes into the hospital. So you're almost doing things, you making the decision of what's best for you and yeah, making things happen or where you have control for the best outcomes. And if it doesn't work out, can at least say, oh, it didn't work out, but was it my fault? No, I actually had someone who I trust who helped, who guided, and then you have the confidence after that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think sort of with the more information that we are sort of, we can tap into now, a great thing there is we can pick and choose what works for us and what doesn't work. And I mean, there's even under the hypnobirthing umbrella, there's hypnobirthing, there's Christian hypnobirthing, there's Aboriginal hypnobirthing. You know, there is so many different things, and what a privilege to be able to tap into those things. but with also the reminder that there isn't one correct way to birth. There isn't one correct way to feed your baby, take care of your baby, to do pregnancy. It is sort of what is working for you, what feels right for you. So dabble into all these different things if that's what feels right, but to find the one that sits well with you. And I think one of the you said sort of breastfeeding, it being experienced as traumatic. With birth, we don't birth, well, births happen every day, but we're not birthing every day. It isn't something that we have lots of experience in. It's not sort of like driving a car, going to work, eating, cooking, walking, these things that we do every day or we do recreationally. Birth is something that is few and far between. So it is a unusual experience. And I think that makes it perhaps, I mean, if we could look at it both ways, you know, it makes it incredibly special, but it also can create anxiety because it's this unknown thing that my body maybe hasn't ever done before. If it's your first baby, there's so many unknowns around this area of motherhood and breastfeeding as well, sort of. How is it going to feel? What are my boobs like? What are my nipples like? Do I have inverted nipples? Does baby have a tongue tie or a lip tie? There's all of these little things that are out of our control. But I think what you've done is incredible because the more connections we can make to providers, the better. And Google can be a minefield of all sorts of great, but also dangerous advice or contradicting advice, but making an appointment with a lactation consultant, you know, they're the ones that can support us and that have that knowledge that perhaps we don't.
Yeah. And I think in that space with Google, I know we spoke about it in the previous episode, and it's something that's prevalent and different for different topics, but the social media space, I've last year or year before, most recently, get a lot of influencers and people talking about their birth stories, but obviously from their perspective. And I think at times it can be, even for me, I've never been through it, things can be triggering. So it's being aware of that, not just about their birth story, about, you know, possibly them breastfeeding, you not being able to, them starting to feed solids, etc., you not yet, or baby sleeping through, not sleeping yet. And people are, yeah, the social media space, we've spoken about, it can be so dangerous, but it's just being aware, and instead of complaining about those people, just removing yourself from following them, because I would say it's become a trend over the past couple of years is sharing your birth story, and almost sometimes the way people phrase it can almost be my perception of it, reading it, comes across as if you've got so much power in having control of a natural birth and not giving in to your medical providers who are telling you your baby's too big, you know, you're supposed to be breathing your baby out, being in the right position, don't be on your back. All this information overload, which some people out there are like almost communicating that it's in your control, that when you go through it yourself, it's because you weren't educated or because you didn't sort of, you know, say what you wanted and you didn't intervene when there were other interventions that you could have prevented, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I saw recently a influencer shared their birth story, and I mean, perhaps not verbatim, but basically what she said at the end was, I had a completely unmedicated vaginal birth. If I can do it, so can you. And you know, perhaps the intention there was, we're all really strong. And, you know, there's so many things that could have been behind it, but how that could be received is, so if I don't have unmedicated, completely natural birth, did I do something wrong? Am I weak?
You're not strong.
There's so many, and I think we as society, you know, can receive these messages in very different ways. And not only sort of what is deemed as popular or best at the moment, but what is best for me as a mom. You know, maybe I have no intention of doing an unmedicated birth. You know, I've also seen people on other ends of the spectrum, and another, she's a midwife, posted something the other day that said, if you are having surgery, we're likely to give you medication for pain. If birth's painful, we're likely to do the same. So there's very different ways of viewing, but I think a big part of it is what feels right for you as mom. And especially with, you know, not especially, but with breastfeeding, I think we've all seen all the taglines of breast is best. But if mom is struggling emotionally with breastfeeding for whatever reason, if it is not healthy for her mentally, maybe there's, you know, anxiety, depression, and for whatever reason, breastfeeding isn't feeling good for her emotionally, is breast still best, you know? So baby is being breastfed, but mom is struggling immensely. You know, the message we're giving there is baby's important. Baby's health is of utmost importance. But mom, as long as you look after baby, you can struggle. And I think, you know, there's something in that for us to look at and acknowledge that what is best for mom, because that is equally as important as what's best for baby. And that extends from pregnancy to birthing intentions to motherhood, breastfeeding. You know, you've got to consider what is best for me as mom and my mental health.
You mentioned earlier hypnobirthing. So can you explain that concept just a little bit more? Because for me, that's actually something that I only came across in the past year.
So I'm not equipped enough to probably give you the best definition, as it's not something that I've personally experienced. But essentially, hypnosis and breathing techniques have a great impact on our anxiety levels and stress levels. So, for example, if we take the birthing process out and we just look at sort of, you know, anxiety techniques, there's different breathing that is beneficial to bring down our anxiety levels. For example, hold four breathing. So breathing in for four, holding for four, out for four. There's lots of different techniques that we've seen has a positive impact on lowering anxiety. So from my understanding, hypnobirthing is combining those breathing techniques and sort of meditative practices, hypnotherapy practices, to allow the intention is to allow mom to be in as peaceful state as possible to manage the birthing process. So I think that the breathing, the hypnobirthing, essentially also can be used as a pain management, whether or not you do it on its own. I mean, there's all of those choices there. But sort of working through the anxiety and the pain using our breathing and sort of meditative practices.
That's very, very interesting. Yeah, I follow a few accounts. Christian hypnobirthing, I know you mentioned it earlier, is actually one of them as well. That and then Birth Ed, which can be very, very visual. I sometimes force myself to just look at going, like, if you can't handle this, I don't know what's waiting.
And sort of the premise of, you know, we know our mind and body are so connected, and sort of visually pushing baby out and sort of feeling where baby is in utero and you know, it can be a very visual, I think, you know, experience. But what I think the hypnobirthing is a great example of picking what works for you. And, you know, there is space in hypnobirthing in the C-section realm as well. And there's some really great resources in sort of affirmations, mindfulness, meditation during a C-section. So I think the school of thought around tapping into my thoughts, my breathing, my emotions, you know, there's some incredible work to be done there.
100%. I think it's something that I'm also, the closer I get with the wanting the knowledge, I'm also doing it in small doses, because at times it feels overwhelming and at times I'm just not ready to sort of retrieve the information. Mm-hmm. So I know the closer I get to sort of due dates or around that period, I'm really interested to actually look more into those breathing techniques. It's something that really appeals to me. And whether it's going to work or not, at least we shall see. Might not even be needed. This is the thing. I might be booked into emergency C-section. We just do not know.
But even then, there's tools, and I think nothing is done. You know, nothing is wasted. And if you've got an intention for a completely unmedicated birth, and you've done hypnobirthing and aromatherapy, and that's sort of your intention, and things don't go that way, yes, there's a process of then working through the perhaps the grief or the loss of your planned birth, and sort of maybe there's some birth trauma. But what you'd learned isn't lost. Mm-hmm. You can carry that with you into the birth that you didn't plan. We know how powerful our own thoughts are. And we know that they have the ability to motivate but also derail us. And sort of if you're working through reframing negative thoughts and bringing positive thoughts, and that's sort of your toolkit, that can be taken into any birth.
So true. No, it's very true. That was actually something I heard on one of the hypnobirthing videos as well, is how it can, you know, be relevant for C-section as well. And it's refreshing to also, when you find accounts or people who are advocating for both and really saying there is no right or wrong, it's comforting to have that two-sided opinion.
And I think sort of the birth might look different for all of us, but the end result of entering motherhood is the same.
Mm.
You know, how we experience our birth, how we experience motherhood, yes, very different. But at the end of whatever the process looks like, the goal is the same, is to reach a connection with our baby, both mom and baby, healthy. And however that's done, the goal is the same.
Yeah, and there's so much emphasis on these pregnancy, birth, that so much emphasis on it. But then you know, you say things go according to your dream plan, unmedicated vaginal birth, delayed cord clamping, skin to skin, you name it, everything that you wanted. But then you end up being like a horrible mother for the first 4 years, and your child had this amazing start, but emotionally, so many other things went wrong. Like, there's so much emphasis on these two stages of their lives that what about the rest? Like, cool, I wasn't breastfed. I can't tell you the difference if I was going to be or not, you know. We actually, I think up until a very late age, I never knew if I was born by a C-section naturally or, but it's, yeah, when you're in it, it's just so much pressure and opinions from externally.
And I think that you've touched on something really useful there, and that how we birth our baby doesn't determine how we're going to be as a mom. And, you know, that I think there is that immense pressure on, I have to do this birth right so I can be a mom right. and the two sort of, you know, aren't connected in that way. You know, I had what I experienced as a really challenging birth with my firstborn, but that doesn't mean I couldn't be a good mom to her. And my second birth being really positive and enjoyable doesn't mean I'm a better mom to him. Do you know what I mean? That our how we become moms isn't an indicator of how we mom.
Yeah, I love that. And it's also not an indicator, like you said as well, with Arlo being colic. Birth went well, but then he had colic and traumatic first birth, but then she was a dream at the beginning. So how you just don't know.
But I think sort of the empowering ourselves with the knowledge without overwhelming ourselves with what all can go wrong. Like if we can find a sweet spot in there, and sort of judging as we go. And I think that's when there's trust in our medical professionals, which I know is easier for some than for others. You know, I wouldn't invite a newly pregnant mom to sit down with her medical professionals and say, tell me everything that can go wrong. You know, that's the, I don't recommend that at all. However, if you have been told, and I can draw my own personal experience with Ophelia, when they said that it's likely that she will have to go to NICU, I was sort of invited to go have a look at the NICU. And I could see what the incubators looked like and the CPAP machines. And I asked them about sort of what could I expect in an environment like this? How does tube feeding work? And that was, you know, something that I thought would be useful for me. I don't think every mom should do that necessarily. But if there is, you know, if maybe at 35 weeks, they say the chances of a vaginal birth are very unlikely, you know, okay, so can you talk me through what happens during a C-section? Does my catheter go in before or after my spinal block? You know, I think gauging on where you are in your process and sort of then moving on to the next step of, can you tell me more about this?
Yeah, I like that. And also just the visual prep actually helped me. Last week was the first time, of course, we've only been here for just under a year, first time I saw where the actual MediClinic was, because we were driving. And I mean, I don't know if I've touched on this before, we spoke about it, but just before we moved from Cape Town, or knew that we were going to move at the time, we didn't. And I was getting, we were talking about having kids, and I wanted Rocco to just meet my gynae, who'd been my gynae for almost a decade. She was based in the MediClinic in Cape Town. We went there. I'm so familiar with that hospital. It's literally a block away from where I grew up. I've had many friends who've birthed there. So I've been into the sort of, I've even been into the, what do you call it? Maternity section. Just, was it? Yeah, that was where Nick's gave birth. They like snuck me in. So I visually, before, while she was there for a second, that everything was very familiar, very comfortable for me. And then moved here, new gynae, not a lot of options. And on the weekend, I was like, please can Rocco drive me to the MediClinic? I just have to visually know where it is. Obviously, this is like not something you should know where your hospital is, but I'm still 23 weeks. I have some time, but I just said, we'll just tick off something visually in my mind, just knowing where the hospital is. You don't know when I'm going to have to get there, because our gynae is not based in the hospital. So we drove there, saw where it was at, saw where the parking was at, just those little things of just, you know, not having the fear of not knowing. I still don't know where the maternity ward is inside. That's the next step. But just having that drive-by giving me a little bit of peace of mind.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's why sort of a lot of the, I'm sure all maybe, offer a maternity tour. Yeah. And I mean, it's so useful to see. And I think also hospitals can have an association with trauma, you know, whether that's the loss of a loved one or illness, or, you know, we can have associations with hospitals to trauma, loss, pain, sickness, to then see a different side of the hospital can be really useful rewiring for our brain that hospitals can be a place of death, but hospitals can be, we've only experienced hospitals in a scary or negative way, then I have to go have a baby there, that can be incredibly daunting. So I think hospital tours are an incredible opportunity for pregnant moms if your hospital offers them. Highly recommend.
100%. And then just before we end off, something that I'm very fascinated about because I've heard so many people talk about it, but is the oxytocin rush. And if you can just share a bit more on that. Is that something, excuse my ignorance, that you only experience with going into labor, vaginal birth, or can you get it in C-section? Yeah, more about the oxytocin rush, I suppose.
So, I mean, an endocrinologist or medical sort of person would know a lot more about this than me. But in terms of oxytocin, I mean, we call it our love hormone. And there's a very interesting avenue, and you're welcome to cut this out, around orgasmic labor. I don't know if you ventured into that.
Quite interesting. I've heard some once or twice, but tell us more.
So oxytocin, we find it's our love hormone. So we find in sort of moments of feeling love and connection, we see it in labor, in delivery, and in orgasm. So oxytocin is our love hormone. So you experience it not just in a vaginal delivery. It's part of the birthing process. And so according to theory, I have not tested this out, but we're releasing similar hormones with oxytocin during delivery and orgasm. And there's some similarities, and there was a really interesting study, and we're going on a bit of a tangent mountain here, but there's an interesting study of animal and human orgasm faces and sounds compared to birthing faces and sounds and the similarities. And there's similar processes happening. So we get our hypnobirthing, but there's also self-stimulation and labor. So women bring themselves to climax during labor as a pain management and enjoyment process.
You must be comfortable to your gynae or your medical team. Unless it's a home birth.
But no, so oxytocin plays a part, obviously, in our births. And does play a role in sort of the love experience. I can't, and it's an interesting question. I'd be interested to find out from more moms. I can't tell you that I felt that surge. But I can't tell you there was, obviously I felt a lot of emotion with both of my newborns and love and connection for sure, but I don't know if I sat and thought, oh, here's my oxytocin, like this feels, I feel the love hormone, you know. I don't know if others do, but I can't recall a moment of being aware of that.
I'm glad you're managing my expectations, because also when you mentioned that, and this is why after a podcast recording, there's so much that I'm like, oh, I should have touched on this. And it was too angled towards one way. But I'm glad you mentioned that, because I also had a friend who I recall becoming a first-time mom, and she spoke about her lack of a connection with her child. Yeah. And just hearing those stories and how that can also be what happens to any of us going through this. Again, comforting to know if you don't have that so-called the rush and you're in a love bible, you're actually the opposite, is to not blame yourself. Similar to what you said about prenatal depression, just because you're going through it doesn't mean you're going to have postnatal depression, doesn't mean that you're going to be a bad mother. So the same with that birthing experience, if it, you know, baby comes and even though it was traumatic, but you looking at this child and you haven't connected in the way that you've heard stories or knowing that that's also normal, process that could happen.
Absolutely. And I think connection, such an important word. If we reflect on any of our connections as adults, most connections take time. If we think about the connection we have with our partner, that grows, it develops, it sort of expands. And it's the same with our children, that connection grows. We grew this little human, but to each other, we're still new. I've got to learn about you. You have to learn about me. That connection grows. I think if you are a mom and you're waiting for this rush of, you know, incredible love that's unmatched, and I'm going to be in this bliss, instantaneous love bubble, and baby arrives on your chest, a little naked alien, and there's a connection, but I'm not feeling this weird love rush, that is so okay. And that connection is going to grow as you learn more about baby, as baby learns more about you, and you have your whole lives together to foster that bond and that nurturance. It doesn't have to happen in the first minute of baby being earthside.
Yeah, so true. Very applicable to where I'm at now as well. I also go through this phase of forgetting I'm pregnant or not, you know, not having the connection where some moms say, oh, we immediately bonded within, you know, whatever week it may be with their child or with whoever's inside. And I literally some days I feel movement, which is comforting, but still very surreal. Just, you know, being in this space of every now and then I tell Rocco, oh my gosh, we're having a baby.
Yeah.
Have to vocalize it to remind myself, because it's not, yeah, it's so typical to what I've heard other moms experience necessarily.
Yeah. And I think there's some, I've heard moms say, well, I want to find out the gender in sort of that connection. Then I've got his or her name and I can begin imagining his or her features. And you know, everyone's pregnancy journey is so, so different. And I think it also depends on, you know, your personality and how you are. Are you a very visual person? I must say, I don't recall now because it's been a few years, but I don't recall visualizing what he or she would look like. And I think, you know, some moms do and some don't, but you know, every person, every mom, every pregnancy, every birth is so different, and there isn't a right way to do it all.
Totally, 100%. That exact same thing that you just said, a friend of mine told me in saying, like, find out the sex because then you can bond, you know, if it's a girl or boy. Me being A type, being very much someone who's, I'm already planning my maternity leave work, like putting it all in place and working on it. I didn't want that for the child. I didn't want to preempt, it's a boy, it's a girl, this is the name, this is how she's going to look like. This is like, I just didn't want that. I, for once, because I'm so structured in other areas of my life, I just want that sort of surprise. And when I was chatting to Rocco, I think I can envision a little boy just immediately assuming it's going to look like him. And I was like, gosh, if we have a girl, I've got no idea what she's going to look like. Like, I keep telling him it's going to be like a little billicky if it's a girl and it looks like him. A little testosterone, a little just don't know.
You just don't know. Yeah. And that's both terrifying and beautiful all at the same time.
Exactly. Oh, thanks so much again for your time. I did start off this conversation just not the chat itself, but just the topic around it being quite sort of overwhelmed. And once again, all your tips and everything that you put into such like beautiful perspective, I know it's going to support a lot of women as well as they enter this unknown territory, or maybe they've done it before, but again, it's unknown with number two, number three. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah. And sort of, as with anything, take from this what works for you and leave what doesn't.
And no judgment. Namaste.
My chakras aligned.
Yeah.
Watch. Where's that kombucha?
Watch me in that hospital. I'm going to be like zero zen. I'm like all talk until I get there.
And that's okay too. And that's where I think the intentions are really important. So plans and intentions.
Exactly. Okay. Until our next chat. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.